You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, find out how an animal archive at UW's Zoological Museum could help save some endangered snakes. Now this week, the Food and Drug Administration will have a new verdict on vaping and e-cigarettes. The agency has imposed regulations on the industry in the past, including banning the sale of 50,000 different flavored vape products. Now the FDA will decide whether e-cigarettes and related products meet the standards of being safe for those consumers who already use them and for not being appealing to non-smokers. We're talking about potential new regulations on vaping products, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. How, if at all, do you think vapes and e-cigarettes should be regulated? Should they have similar regulations to regular cigarettes and other traditional tobacco products? Have you switched from cigarettes to some kind of vaping product yourself? Do you think flavors should be on the table? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Doug Jorenby is Director of Clinical Services for the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. He's a clinical psychologist and professor of medicine at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Jorenby, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi. It's a pleasure to be able to join you today.
I want to start off by talking about this process and what's at stake. It's a little complicated because it's not just a ruling coming down on all vaping products. It's a lot of applications, as I understand it, from a lot of different companies. What's going on here?
Yeah, and you really didn't overstate that. The FDA got somewhere in the order of 6.5 million of these applications, which is basically permission to market non-traditional tobacco products. So anything that was out there on the market before the 15th of February in 2007 is grandfathered, but everything since then just opens up a whole realm of new devices and versions of e-juice, and I don't think anyone actually believes that they're going to be rendering decisions about all 6.5 million of those products as of tomorrow, but they do seem to be prioritizing a number of them.
What are those priorities? Are they the bigger names on the market, for example?
That's basically what they've been hinting. You mentioned in your introduction that, you know, near the end of August here, they actually issued 55,000 denials, which were kind of the low-hanging fruit. You know, those were the applications that were incomplete, that didn't have data to accompany them. And for the most part, they were flavors of e-juice that have really been set aside as marketing almost exclusively to young people who were not already tobacco users. And that's one of the priorities of things that they don't want to have on the market.
What kind of things is the FDA weighing as they evaluate each one of these seven-digit number of products, these millions of products?
Yeah, it's an awful lot of work. So the overarching priority they have, not surprisingly, given that it's the Food and Drug Administration, but they're looking at it in the context of protecting public health. And the way that's being implemented in more concrete terms are, first of all, they're looking for evidence, and it's evidence, not just assertion, that products that will be authorized for sale will help people who are currently using traditional tobacco products to quit, whether that means, you know, quitting nicotine entirely, whether it means transitioning to a lower risk kind of delivery system, which is what some people have described e-cigarettes as, that's not as clearly defined. They're also looking very closely, and this is where the denials from the end of August come in. They don't want to approve anything that is going to increase the uptake of nicotine or tobacco products. And they're specifically, they're looking at younger populations. And then finally, kind of in their, you know, their traditional remit, they're also looking for evidence that the methods used to produce these things, the ingredients, the manufacturing processes are safe and reliable. So it's a compilation of those three different factors.
Talking to Dr. Doug Jorenby from the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. We're talking about e-cigarettes and vaping, the FDA reviewing millions of applications. trying to decide whether to allow products to be sold, marketed, figure out if they are safe, if they help people quit smoking traditional tobacco products, and at the same time, are they luring kids into using nicotine in the first place? You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see, if anything, from the FDA here? Do you use vaping products yourself? What's your experience been like? Are you in the business? Are you worried about what's coming out, maybe in the next few days? Call in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Jordanby, let's take a couple of the different pieces of the puzzle here, starting with vaping by people who used to smoke cigarettes. What do we know about comparative risk for that regular, say, cigarette smoker who switches over to regular e-cigarette use?
In exactly the terms that you described, that's really a no-brainer. Because if you look at a traditional cigarette, when it's used the way it's intended, you know, regular daily smokers, we know from actually now almost a century of experience that that's going to end up killing about 1 in 2 users of traditional cigarettes. So, you know, by comparison, you're setting the bar extraordinarily low. Mm-hmm. Initially, it really seemed like e-cigarettes were going to be just, you know, in a completely different realm. We knew they didn't have carbon monoxide in them, which is one of the dangerous things people inhale from burning tobacco. We knew that it was going to have less than the hundreds of, you know, cancer-causing agents that's in tobacco smoke. Unfortunately, as we've been playing catch-up with this, you know, scientifically and in terms of treatment, we've found that it's a lower risk when people are vaping. But there's a couple big qualifiers there. One is that there are some health risks that do seem to be specific to vaping, you know, whether it's particulates that are drawn down into the lungs, whether it's metals that come from the atomization of the vapor that pose their own risks. I think more to the point, though, we've also discovered that in the real world, while switching to e-cigarettes seems really appealing to a lot of people who are smoking, what actually happens in a large number of cases is instead of quitting smoking completely and transitioning to vaping or quitting both altogether, people end up betwixt and between. They're what we call dual users. So some of the time they vape and some of the time they smoke. And we don't have long-term data on that, but at this point in the short to medium term, it seems like smoking some of the time doesn't really reduce people's risk all that much. So it is, as much as people like to throw the term harm reduction around, if someone is a dual user, it doesn't look like there's a whole lot of harm being reduced at this point.
All right, now let's move over to a different bar here and compare what we know about e-cigarettes to smoking cessation products that have been tested and approved, the gums and the patches and things like that. What do we know about how those stack up against e-cigarettes?
Right. Well, we know for the most part that they're more effective in helping people quit smoking completely. That's what they're designed to do.
The gums and patches I mentioned are more effective than the e-cigarettes, just to clarify.
Yes. Okay. Yes. They certainly have a much larger base of evidence. Really, at this point, there's only one really well-designed, you know, adequately powered study looking at nicotine replacement and smoking cessation treatments versus e-cigarettes. And that one was actually done in the United Kingdom, so it's not directly comparable. But with the smoking cessation therapies that are all FDA approved, with those, we have anywhere from decades to at the short end, probably about 15, 20 years of evidence of them being safe and effective when used as directed.
We're talking to Dr. Doug Jordanby, Director of Clinical Services for the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. He's talked to us about vaping and e-cigarettes and some big rulings on the way from the FDA on millions of vaping products. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Would you like to see the FDA crack down a lot on e-cigarette products or keep a light touch on the industry? Do you want to see more research into e-cigarettes and their risks, their possible benefits as compared to cigarettes. Still a lot of questions open. Do you want to see bans on flavored vaping products? That the concern is, we'll talk about this more, that they may appeal to kids and get them to try nicotine for the first time. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our conversation with Dr. Doug Jornby from the Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention at the UW, looking at rulings coming maybe very soon from the FDA on a long list of vaping products. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on vaping, what kind of regulation you do or don't want to see, your questions about e-cigarettes. That's 800-642-1234. Before we go to our calls, Dr. Jornby, though, I want to ask about the kid angle here, the concern that there are flavors and products that are all but marketed toward kids, the risk of bringing them into nicotine use in the first place. How does the FDA weigh those considerations?
Well, that's definitely one of the key criteria that they're looking at in deciding, you know, which products will be allowed on the market following these decisions that will start rolling out tomorrow. They've already taken steps. So the most obvious example is the Juul products, the pods that contain nicotine salts. When that was somewhere in the realm of 70 to 80% of the market, their most popular flavors of that included things like mango, cream, and fruit. And they saw which way the wind was blowing and got out just moments ahead of the FDA banning a lot of the fruit and candy flavored. So they brought that down so that they were only offering tobacco and menthol and mint. And then, you know, the FDA said, nope, mint is not on the table at all. So that went away. And there's really solid reasons for that. We know now from some population studies, the first done in California, looking at a very small, large sample of young people, that among those who had never smoked at all, teenagers who started vaping were on the order of 2 to 3 times more likely to then go on and start smoking traditional tobacco cigarettes. And that's been a finding that's been replicated in different populations since then. So it's a pretty significant risk factor.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Nick is on the line in Green Bay. Nick, hi.
Hi, I'm pretty spiteful towards the tobacco companies. I'm very spiteful towards them. I didn't have a dad growing up. My uncle was my life. He was just amazing. He smoked since he was 6 years old. He tried the vaping he said it was less dangerous. Well, about 2 years ago, he passed away. He's only 10 years older than that. My world just was destroyed. These tobacco companies are just terrible. They're just vultures preying on kids and stuff with all these stupid flavors and stuff. It's just ridiculous. I wish people could have been there when my uncle passed away with me and seen the damage that tobacco and all that stuff does to people. I'm devastated yet. It's been 2 years.
Nick, thank you for sharing that story. I'm so sorry for your loss. Dr. Jornby, Nick, putting a human face there on what we see in statistical terms a lot of times.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's important to not lose sight of, you know, the individuals involved. And I'm really sorry to hear that you lost your uncle as well. And it's also important to realize, too, that there's not a bright dividing line between this. All of the traditional tobacco companies they already have and are moving forward with different, you know, vaping, e-cigarette, or sometimes what are called heat don't burn products. So they've seen the writing on the wall as well, and they're trying to secure a chunk of that market going forward.
Thanks again for that call. We'll go now to Donna in Madison. Donna, hi.
Hi. I want to thank you for having this subject on your station. It is well needed. There are too many young people that this is attracting them, that it's cool to be doing vaping, and they refuse to listen to people that have knowledge about the damages of vaping and smoking, etc. And thank you again very much for putting this show on about the subject.
Donna, thanks a lot for that call. And Dr. Jornby, what do we know about the health impacts, especially of vaping on younger users, on people who start maybe in high school or even middle school?
Well, we know that they're at increased risk when they start that young to continue using nicotine throughout their life. At this point, it's hard to say whether that is automatically going to translate into smoking later. But unfortunately, and this has almost disappeared from, you know, awareness, given what we've been dealing with the COVID pandemic in the last year and a half. But shortly before that, we actually had a very striking example of young people who were put at immediate risk and unfortunately in many cases lost their lives from vaping, essentially, you know, contraband market products, most of which contained THC, sometimes with nicotine, sometimes without. But these were not, you know, products that were sold over the counter commercially. But the technology of vaping and e-cigarettes is pretty agnostic as to, you know, what's in the cartridge, what's in the fluid. And these contaminations resulted in a number of young people ending up in, you know, intensive care units and unfortunately in many cases dying because they were vaping contaminated products.
Thanks again for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Dr. Doug Jornby with the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention, looking at the FBA's review of millions of e-cigarette and vaping-related products and maybe changes in how they're regulated. We'll be finding out over the next few days. Back to your calls now. We've got Mark on the line, on the road. Mark, hi.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. I just got a quick question here. Hopefully you can hear me okay. I'm an over-the-road driver, so it might be kind of loud.
I hear you loud and clear, Mark. Go ahead.
Awesome. So I'm a longtime cigarette smoker myself, and I guess my question is, so I've recently kind of dabbled into the Juul, and I noticed that I don't use it as often as I would like smoking cigarettes. Is there a misconception that the tobacco cigarettes might be, I get both are bad for you, but might be better because it's more organic versus the 100% chemical makeup of something like an e-cigarette.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. So Dr. Jornby, he's concerned about the chemicals in Juul, but I know there are concerns about cigarette products not just being a tobacco plant.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's almost impossible to find a traditional cigarette that is just tobacco. It's not just that they're, you know, cured and processed, but there are substances added to them, such as ammonia, that increase the bioavailability of the nicotine and, you know, get people hooked on that more readily. The biggest risk factor, though, you know, in the comparison Mark was making between a traditional cigarette and an e-cigarette, isn't so much about the chemical compound, it's what happens when we burn. When you burn tobacco, that combustion creates a whole new realm of, you know, dangerous substances, things that are hard on the lungs, on the cardiovascular system in the body. And that's where most of the excess risk comes from. So to the extent that e-cigarettes are, I'm not going to say safe, but are less hazardous to people, it's because combustion isn't taking place. It's just the aerosol that's being created, and that's what people are inhaling into their lungs.
Mark, thanks for that call. And Dr. Jornby, this is right up your alley at the Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. Mark's in this situation. He smokes. He's obviously concerned about the health impact. Where would you suggest he start with efforts to try to kick the habit? And I know it's tough. I know it can take multiple tries.
It absolutely is. And, you know, doing a dangerous job like driving truck over the road where you got to stay focused sometimes under very bad conditions. I can totally understand where, you know, it helps him focus. He doesn't want to be distracted and going through the kind of things that people do when they're quitting cold turkey with nicotine withdrawal. We do, though, have a whole range of different evidence-based treatments that help reduce the withdrawal symptoms, that help reduce the craving. And what I would encourage Mark or anyone else in that situation thinking about quitting is, you know, reach out to your healthcare providers. We've got treatments now that are readily available. They're all covered under the Affordable Care Act at no cost to people because they're considered preventive care. And these double or triple people's chances of success. And that is without any of the risks that have been identified with people vaping. So that would definitely be a great place to start for anyone who's thinking seriously about getting tobacco out of their life.
Mark, thanks for that call. Good luck to you. Time for one more call. Ellen is with us in Birchwood. Ellen, hi.
Hi, I'm a nicotine dependence counselor, and I just wanted to add that, you know, kids are more addictive, you know, under age 25. So when they use these flavors, I mean, that's how they're getting, you know, these kids with hooking them, you know, in this addictive time of their life. And it's just super unfortunate. I hope these flavors don't go through.
Ellen, thanks for the call and sharing your expertise. Dr. Jornby, kids vulnerable to addiction if they start these products.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've identified some genetic variants that if people start using nicotine before the age of 16, the chance of them becoming dependent and the difficulty they have quitting later on goes up dramatically. And I agree with Ellen, you know, some of those fruit flavors, the candy flavors, they're definitely aimed at young people. And what's shocking is a lot of them, when they're interviewed, don't even realize that there's nicotine in the products. They're focused on the flavor. They're focused on the taste of or the process of vaping to fit in, and don't even realize that they're taking in nicotine until they've developed a dependence on it. And, you know, then it's a real challenge to get that out of their lives.
Dr. Jornby, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's Dr. Doug Jornby, Director of Clinical Services for the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. He's a clinical psychologist and professor of medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He joined us for a look at e-cigarettes and vaping and new rulings rolling out, maybe starting by the end of this week, from the FDA on a long list of vaping-related products.